Tango Tango Papa 1969, July 6, 2016.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Bolingbrook, Illinois. So it's been a while since the last podcast. I was home for what turned out to be actually maybe a week or a little more. about a week, I guess. I had originally intended to, I feel a sneeze coming on. I had originally intended to go back to work on July 3rd, but, that would have been on Sunday. So the previous Friday, Friday afternoon, they called and they had this load that, there was this other driver that had this load that was delivering in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which I live basically very close to, that didn't deliver until I guess it would be Tuesday morning, since Monday was a holiday, July the 4th. So it didn't deliver until early 5 a.m. Tuesday morning. And they were wondering if I would just swap the empty trailer that I had and take that load, and I'd get a couple of extra days at home, the 3rd and the 4th, if I was willing to deliver it. And of course I was. Why not? Of course I would. So that's what I did, and so I was home for about a week, which ended up thoroughly enjoying. I had intended, you know how intentions go, I had intended to record a podcast while I was home, but just for whatever reason wasn't motivated to do so. And as I've said a million times, podcasting is all about motivation and maybe the lack thereof. And with the lack thereof, I just didn't feel like doing it, and I didn't do it, therefore. So in any case, I've got a audio comment, longer audio comment from Joel, and then we're going to have at least one audio comment from Scott. Scott has sent me some podcast comments, and I've kind of been remiss in getting to them, so hopefully they're not too dated. Of course, I haven't been podcasting nearly as much as I once did, and it's about motivation. What kind of brings me, I've been considering the idea, and I don't know if there's any merit to it or not, but I've been considering the idea, is it possible to kind of overshare? What is it that motivates people to share? So I'm sort of thinking out loud right now. Let's say you buy something, or you go to a restaurant and you experience something, or whatever it is. You go somewhere and you experience something, and oftentimes you sort of feel motivated to share with friends and family. kind of share the idea, and maybe they'll like the restaurant or whatever it is that you like, or maybe they won't. And sometimes they don't. But oftentimes, more often than not, if you've got friends and family, then they will kind of share at least similar tastes with you. You know, everybody's a little different, and everybody's not exactly the same. So, but there's always that. Let's say you buy a vehicle, for example. Usually, there's a good percentage of the time when you buy something that someone close to you, a friend or a relative, there's a good chance, I don't know what the chance is, but there's a good chance that they will buy something similar, or they'll end up doing something similar because they see what you have and they decide that they like it. So the online, especially the social media, was sort of born out of that, sort of like the online version. And I think initially that's what really motivated me to podcast. And so I was podcasting. There was a long period of time where I was podcasting virtually every day. But the question is it possible to just kind of overdo it? Or is it possible that there's only so much sharing that you really have there, that you sort of feel motivated to do, and then after that the motivation's gone, and and that's that. And so that is something, you know, that I've been thinking about, and it's certainly something to consider. The question is, what really do you get? Does the person sharing, what do you get out of sharing? You know, you have the idea, well, maybe you can help other people, or that's usually the biggest one. Maybe help other people find something wonderful or nice, or something that they might enjoy. But again, is it possible to sort of overdo it and kind of just run out of motivation, as it were? And so I don't know what the answer is, but I just know that I don't feel as motivated as I once did to kind of, really kind of share my life, and my thoughts, etc., online as much as I once did, and specifically in this podcast. So that's a question. I'll toss it out there. If anybody has any thoughts on the subject, love to hear them. Most podcasts end up sort of, and there's certainly exceptions, but I'd say most podcasts, eventually people just sort of, they fizzle out, and people sort of lose the motivation to do them. And what is that mechanism? What causes that to happen? Now, the type of podcast that I listen to, in many cases, there's a little bit of that element in there, but not necessarily. So I'm not necessarily seeking that kind of thing out. Now, I do watch a lot of YouTube videos on many different topics. And it's kind of, it's just sort of serendipitous. I go from one, typically from one kind of topic to another. And oftentimes, if the person that's putting the videos up there is really prolific, then I'll watch a bunch of those. And typically, they'll end up kind of including some of the details of their own lives, and sometimes that's interesting. It seems that more often than not, after I've kind of, you know, I'll get to the point where I've sort of exhausted my interest in a particular topic. One of the topics that I kind of exhausted, it was a surprise to me, and I think I'm sure I've talked about it whenever it was. It's been months ago. But I was watching all of these videos where these people were sort of working on electronics. There was this guy that was lived in the Chicago area, and he was working on vintage televisions, restoring them, and I kind of found that interesting. And there were other people that were doing the same thing. Lately, I just haven't been paying much attention to that. Now, of course, part of that may be that YouTube, as my interest in clicking on those videos sort of dropped off. And part of it had to do with this one guy in particular. I had watched virtually all of his videos. The guy that was making these really old TVs work that you'd think it was just junk. In some cases, they were just the chassis had been sitting outside rusting. You know, and here he was eventually making them work again. But I think, you know, I'd watched all of his videos, and then it just sort of tapered off, and he wasn't putting much new stuff out, and therefore I wasn't clicking on it. And so therefore YouTube just sort of stopped offering it, and so the only way I would actually, I'm sure the guy's been putting up new videos in the meantime in the past few months, but I would actually have to go seek it out find it in the list again, because YouTube doesn't necessarily, even if you've subscribed to someone's videos, YouTube doesn't necessarily push those up to the top whenever you log into YouTube. It has a tendency to just kind of, they push some of their own stuff, the stuff that they want you to see sometimes, but they'll push the most popular of what the type of stuff that you've been watching recently. So that may have something to do with it. Now while I was off, my parents, who are there for the, you know, my house for the summer, basically, and I kind of knew they were going to do it, they bought an RV, or actually a travel trailer, because they've had lived in RVs for pretty much ever since mom retired first, and then dad retired few years later, and then that's been since he retired. That was way back in the probably in the 90s, and so they've had an RV of one form or another since then. So they bought a travel trailer, I found that kind of interesting. And so I've been watching, in the past week since they bought that, I've been watching a ton of travel trailer videos, RV videos, especially dealers kind of showing the new models. There's a bunch of those that get published on YouTube constantly. Of course, I hadn't really paid attention to it. But there are the RV sales, at least in the United States and probably in Canada as well, are really booming for whatever reason. And I can tell you why. There's several reasons for it, at least I think. But the sales are just off the scales. They're really booming. And, any kind of recreational vehicle, especially travel trailers, are just selling like hotcakes. But I believe the reason is, number one, the housing is kind of expensive, and people are finding that they can live a lot more cheaply in a travel trailer. The travel trailer, the 27-foot travel trailer that my parents just bought, has two slide outs, Which that ends up expanding the usable floor space and internal space in the RV. It ends up expanding it, and so you end up with more space, and you know, in something that's only 27 foot long, you end up with something that's that is quite livable. What did they give for it? Like $23,500, which that is not bad for something that you can actually live in. Now, of course, since it's a travel trailer, there's no laundry, there's no washer and dryer, there is no dishwasher, even though it has a nice kitchen and even a kitchen island and lots of countertop space and so on and so forth, and a walk-in shower. It's got all those amenities, even with a queen bed. But it doesn't, you know, none of the travel trailers basically have those three things that I listed, a washer and a dryer or a dishwasher. And I think the reason being is because you've got a very limited amount of water. Most travel trailers do have small water tanks, like for fresh water. And then gray water, which that's the water that you run through your kitchen sink or your bathroom sink. And then so-called black water, which that's the toilet. And so you have these three tanks that, and they're obviously limited. You know, you're going to be limited, you know, it depends on the travel trailer, but it's typical that you might have maybe 30 to 50 gallons of fresh water. And then, periodically, if you're so-called dry camping, which dry camping simply means that you're in a place where there is no hookups to utilities. If you're dry camping, then eventually you're going to have to take the thing and dump it somewhere. You dump the gray water and the black water. You got to dump that and then take on more fresh water. So that's really the reason why that you don't have those appliances that use lots of water. So, but they're very livable. Regular mobile home parks, they're not really opening up new mobile home parks. Most of the mobile homes that the dealers that you see, people are buying mobile homes, traditional mobile homes, double wides, but they're putting them on their own land. They're not putting them, I'd say very few of them are being actually placed in mobile home parks. And the mobile home parks that exist already are usually, especially in cities and towns, are kind of in use. They're already full. And in some cases, periodically, you'll read an article where whoever owns it ends up just selling it out to developers, just kind of sell the land and close the mobile home park. And then the people that have their mobile homes parked in there are just out of luck. They have to go somewhere, do something different all of a sudden. And, you know, they're sort of ends up being dislocated. And so there's still a demand for inexpensive housing, and so that is kind of, if you go back into the 60s and the 70s in particular, you had mobile home parks, and you had mobile homes that were being sold to be put into mobile home parks, and so you had new mobile home parks that were kind of coming online in various places, especially in the Midwest, but that kind of went away. And as I say, now most of the mobile homes that are sold are probably double wide variety, and they're going on land that someone else already owns. That they already own, and they just so they're, I'd say that's probably the majority. Just kind of guessing. Making an educated guess. So there's still a demand for inexpensive housing, and so that's what's kind of pushing this RV, the surge of RV buying. And people are actually, not only using those to camp in, but they're also using them to live in. And so you have people that are living in their RVs full time. And so there's this one couple, there's several couples, but there's this one in particular that they're really articulate. Both the husband and the wife are just super articulate. And they've got, they've got this bus that they converted into an RV. And it was originally a Greyhound bus from the 1960s. And they've spent a lot of money in kind of converting that thing into a, you know, kind of renovating it. I guess if someone else had already converted it into an RV at some point, they've spent money renovating it. And so they're doing at least, I think, probably, I've watched a number of their videos, maybe weekly. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe not quite that often. But they're doing, they pick a topic and then they live stream to YouTube. They're kind of sharing their, basically they're sharing their lives, they're sharing, you know, kind of what they're doing. They're enthusiastic about living on the, living in an RV all the time and kind of moving all around the country. And of course both of them work, but they're able to work via the internet. So, I think both of them are kind of in a, sort of software type business. So, but they're kind of interesting. And so I've been watching a lot of videos like that. So I'm enjoying other people sharing, but maybe me not so much. Don't feel the motivation. And I've kind of for a long time, I felt the motivation especially to do the podcast, just kind of drop. And, and I can't force it to, I can't artificially force it to happen. It's got to be my own motivation. And if it's not, then it's just not going to, I'm not going to do it. So, but that's a question. But I've noticed other people, they'll get hot and heavy on the internet. And I've noticed this over a long period of time. They'll be, on there all the time. And then inevitably, they end up kind of tapering off. And I've seen that happen over and over again. Not necessarily podcasting, but certainly people with videos, I've seen that happen. If you look, you stumble on someone's videos and you can see there's a period of time where they're just posting videos constantly, and then inevitably it drops off. I've seen it happen, even with people on Facebook, where they're just posting stuff constantly, and then after a period of time they just sort of drop off a little bit. Maybe they don't go completely away, but they're just not as prolific as they once were. And not sure what that the mechanism of that is. So anybody's got any ideas, I'm all ears. So anyway, as I say, I've got a comment from Joel and at least one comment from Scott. So let's just jump right on to the end of those. So here is Joel.
Just wanted to make sure that was going to work before I put a comment in. I was listening to, at least Joel, listening to 1967. And I think it was Jeremy had questions about those trucks that would carry freight, the freight containers that like you would see on a ship. Just not last week, week four, I was in Williamsburg, Virginia for vacation with my greater family, my dad, my brother, and his kids. There's also another purpose. My mom, she passed away in Christmas Day in 2015. So we had her cremated, and we wanted to spread her ashes there. But that's not really what I'm talking to you. we stayed on, I believe, I'm trying to remember the name of the street, but it was actually Route 60, where our hotel was. Wasn't the greatest hotel in the world, but it was, you know, place to sleep. So we go there, and first night I noticed this. There's train tracks that I didn't see till after I heard the train. the train tracks were very, very active. And you would see it would alternate between freight trains, and we'd also see Amtrak trains going through there, which I found pretty interesting. I remember back in the 70s where I think my grandparents took Amtrak someplace. I can't remember exactly where, but they were really excited about it at the time. But it really never came to fruition. You know, there was a promise at some point of having like high speed trains here in the United States, like we would have, like they have over in Japan and Europe. And I think that's something we need. There's cases where I know of people on the East Coast who live in that Amtrak corridor that they live as far away as, like, for example, they work as far away as Cleveland is from me here. That would never work here in Columbus because it's a 2-hour drive and there is no train tracks. Now, tried talking about doing a high-speed rail between downtown Columbus and Cleveland. Never really happened. Some of the problems is that almost everywhere you would have to share tracks with freight trains. And freight, especially here in Ohio, freight trains seem to go through pretty much every major city. Columbus has a yard. They have one up in Cleveland. I know they have one in Cincinnati and in Dayton even. I think they have one. So, you know, other than trucks, like you drive, freight trains are hugely active. And it's almost a system they have. Now, you know, that's that freight train plus the shipping container boats. It's how, like, for a good example here is I have a Jide Ultra tablet. I'm actually waiting on a replacement part. And the company's based in Hong Kong. And they shipped it directly from Hong Kong. iPads, when you buy an iPad or an iPhone, if you get an iPad, reserve an iPad, they usually drop ship them right from China. So, you know, the freight system that we have here that really, you know, is a combined effort of planes, trains, automobiles, and trucks. Not so much automobiles, but you get the idea. Is an amazing system nowadays. In the 70s, I would not imagine being able to order something from Hong Kong. I mean, I'm sure we had stuff in Hong Kong. I wouldn't imagine ordering something from Hong Kong and it taking only a week to get to the United States. Nowadays, that's pretty commonplace. You know, I've had some things that I've ordered from Hong Kong or China that came much, much faster than I ever thought possible. I've even had some stuff only take a couple days to get here. So, but that's the one thing. The freight stuff is kind of interesting. I want to start another comment. Now, 86, I believe you were talking a little bit about Uber and about doing that as a job. I think it's a fantastic idea myself. I thought about either doing that or now in Columbus, we have a unique privilege of having Amazon Prime Now. Amazon Prime Now is 2 hours delivery, and it's not everything Amazon sells, obviously, but a good chunk of what Amazon sells, free. You know, the 2-hour delivery is free. If you need something sooner than that, like in an hour, then that's $8. Okay. Well, how do they do that? Exactly like Uber. They have an application. When you go in, you go to, I believe it's flex.amazon.com. And when you go there, you basically you sign up for being a driver. You take like a test and you have to go through a background check. But once you've done that, you load up an app, by the way, Android only, on your phone. And then when you take that phone, you basically take that, you log into that, you look for available to our blog, and you deliver packages for Amazon Prime Now in that 2-hour block. So you pick up the packages at the central location here in Columbus that's out in the west side. And then you go and deliver packages for 2 hours. And it could be anything. It could be my very first order as a test. I saw it on there, so I had to order it. I got some ice cream, and it actually came to my door, and it was still frozen. So, yeah, I mean, it was a little bit soft. It wasn't, completely as frozen as you might like it, but it's frozen enough. You know, it worked. It was amazing. So, and that works for that. Now, Uber, I travel for work. Once or twice a year, I travel for work. So I always am prepared because I never know when, you know, I could be traveling. In fact, I may end up be traveling more as of July 1st. One of my coworkers is going to another division. And we're going to be down to 3 to cover pretty much all of North America, 3 installers. So most of my installation work doesn't take me out of my house. But occasionally I have to go and do evaluations and I have to go train people. So in that case, I usually have to fly. And as part of that, I have, I have the ability to do all the scheduling on my own through our corporate travel agency. And when I'm traveling, of course, I have the ability to pay for that. And I've looked at both Uber and taxi. Now, taxis here in Columbus, now I don't know how it is elsewhere, but here in Columbus, now granted, not anybody can drive a yellow cab, but here in Columbus, yellow cab, believe it or not, actually has an application. And that's one of the things that makes Uber unique, is that you can order up the cab via the application. What makes it possibly better. I say possibly because I don't really think it's necessarily better, but is the fact that it's not a yellow cab. It could be something like a Lincoln Town Car. You know, it's usually a much nicer vehicle. And as a business traveler, I'm a very much of a form over function kind of deal. I much prefer the form, basically just being able to get there over being able to get there nicely, being able to get there and be relatively comfortable. To me, I just want to get there. Okay. So cost-wise, depending on where you go and depending on if there's surge pricing involved with because Uber has that, can vary. Most of the times, it's actually very comparable to a yellow cab to grab an Uber. Probably the better thing with Uber is it's just a little bit more convenient. So I've never taken an Uber. At this point, for business work anyway, because it's just easier. Like airports are all set up for, when I get home or when I get to an airport, really actually when I get to an airport at my final destination, it's just a matter of either walking or riding a shuttle bus over to the rental car place to grab my rental car for the week. But when I get home, usually late in the evening, I just go up to the taxi line. It's very convenient. They've set this up for years. I might consider doing an Uber. You know, it's not really something I considered all that much. I do have the app on the phone. I have set it up. Some of the issues I have with the company itself, although I think they're resolving some of those, is there was something that their CEO did, and I can't remember it. It wasn't very nice or savory. So, you know, there's other various things. I guess if people want to do it, that's fine. It sounds like a fun idea. Make some money, and you get to meet people. But it's really the same thing, though, for me when I ride taxi. I've had white drivers, I've had black drivers, I've had Indian drivers, and each one of them have an interesting story to tell and why they got to the point where they're driving a taxi. And those are really interesting. I have some of the most interesting conversations just meeting these random people. So I guess Uber would be the same. But then you address self-driving cars. I'm all for it. In fact, I think when I was in Virginia, driving to get to Williamsburg, I had to, of course, drive through Richmond, which is not all that far from Washington, D.C., and in and around the Hampton Roads and all that area. Virginia has what they call hub lanes or high occupancy vehicle lanes. And to me, I could see either those lanes converting into self-drive lanes basically, you know, once you get on that, you're on it. Car handles, you tell them where you want to get off, and it basically drives you that whole lane, and it would handle everything for you. You could surf the internet, do whatever, as long as, and I believe too, there also needs to be a system that would test that you're paying attention. So there should be a occasional check to make sure that if something does happen, that you can take control. Plus, it shouldn't just be self-drive. It should always be it should be both. So, all right. Talk to you later, Tom.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joel. Self-driving cars. You know, I've talked about this before. I think that that's years away. I don't think that it's, I know there are people that want the self-driving cars, and there are people that sort of want to believe in the technology, you know, almost like technology is a savior, and there is a tendency for for people to varying degrees to sort of look to technology as a sort of a savior, and it's kind of they look to technology as a distraction from their from their miserable lives. And in the real world, self-driving cars are, if they ever do happen, they're years and years away. Now, what's happening with Tesla? Tesla has their so-called autopilot. And I'm sure you've heard about the guy down in Florida it's been recently. At least they finally announced it. The guy down in Florida, I think he was maybe McClenny, Florida, or someplace, but he was on a four-lane divided road that was not limited access, And so it had this four lane divided road, which Florida has some of those, has cross, you know, they've got like crossovers, you know, where you just cross right at the traffic level. And so this guy, as I understood it, because, you know, I was reading several different articles, he was headed north on, you know, whatever highway this was. And so, but there was this truck that was, you know, there was some sort of a little fuel stop or something, I'm assuming, off on the side. It would be out like on the east side. And so there was this truck that, you know, there was a lot of traffic, maybe, you know, because sometimes those roads are busy. Let's say that there was lots of traffic, and so the truck just pulls out. And, you know, assuming that people are just going to have to hit the brakes so he can go. Now, I don't know that that happened, if that's what happened. We'll probably never really know the full story, but... So the truck pulled out. So the truck was crossway, you know, across the northbound part of the road. You know, the northbound two lanes, and so he was so this Tesla approached at a, you know, a high rate of speed. Of course, there's no way. I guess the Tesla would know because of the logs. But obviously now, you know, since a fatality was involved, they're never going to say. Maybe you can get, maybe after the fact you could find, you know, maybe get the details from the inevitable court, you know, the litigation that's going to inevitably going to flow from this accident. But so anyway, the Tesla just approached, you know, just went right underneath the truck at a high rate of speed. And the driver, you know, somebody interviewed the driver and got him to talk a little bit, the truck driver. And he said he didn't even, it happened so fast, he didn't even know that it happened. And then the truck driver also said that, you know, and I don't know how he knew it, but he said that the guy, you know, after the car came to a stop, they found the guy, you know, he was watching Harry Potter somehow. You know, maybe he was, well, I don't know if he was watching it on his phone. Now on the Tesla, you know, those touch screens in the center of the dash, specifically, you can't watch videos on those. Tesla, you know, kind of blocks any video from playing on those. But he may well have had his phone. Now, so you know what happened. He went underneath a truck at a high rate of speed. So off with his head. You know, it sheared the top of the car off and decapitated him, obviously. So... But in any case, I found the guy, you know, because you could find the guy's name, and I don't have it, you know, right now. I don't remember what it is. But his name, you can search his name on YouTube, because the guy had posted YouTube videos about his Tesla. And in fact, I had watched some of them previously, because I've been watching a bunch of Tesla videos before the guy died, actually. And maybe, I'm not sure, because they didn't announce his death right away. But in any case, before they announced it anyway, I watched several of his videos, and he was talking about, well, this is how autopilot works. And, you know, in one of the videos, somebody was cutting him off, and the autopilot was able to react immediately, you know, right away, and sort of protect the car from being hit by this some sort of utility truck that was cutting him off, or cutting the Tesla off. So, you know, and the autopilot reacted. But the guy was saying, well, I liked, you know, he sets the thing at 5 miles an hour over the speed limit. I've not heard any of these articles talk about that. You know, so here the guy's saying, I like to set it 5 miles an hour over the speed limit. Whatever the speed limit is, I set it 5 miles an hour over if I'm setting cruise control. And he also had a dash cam. So this guy, the guy that died, had a dash cam. But, you know, none of the articles have mentioned that he would have had a dash cam. Now, it might well have been destroyed in the accident, because it would have been, it would have impacted the side of the truck. But there might be a chance that it's running on an SD card as the memory. There's probably a good chance that the SD card survived. Maybe, I don't know. Hard to say. But, you know, or it may have just been thrown, you know, as debris. Because he underran the side of the truck, the trailer, at speed. So the driver didn't see the trailer, and the Tesla autopilot, the camera, wasn't able to distinguish, you know, it was a white trailer against a bright sky, is what they keep saying in all these articles. So the Tesla's autopilot was unable to recognize that it was about to run into something. And so the brakes were not, in one of the articles it said there were no brakes ever applied. So he hit at speed. It did not hit the brakes at all, and the driver didn't either. So that tells me that he was distracted, because a human being that's driving, that's actually got his hands on the wheel and that is in control, and there's no automatic steering happening, or automated steering happening, they're going to see a truck pull out, even if it's white, even if, a bright sky or whatever, you're going to see a truck pull out if you're paying attention. Now, if you're distracted, maybe not. Obviously, the guy was distracted. So, I think there's a problem. There's clearly a problem. The autopilot, you know, Tesla can say all day long that it's beta software and they make people click through agreements that they should be paying attention and ready to take over at a moment's notice, blah, 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 blah. There are a certain percentage of people that are going to become complacent with it, and rather quickly become complacent with it. And you're going to end up probably, I think ultimately Tesla's going to have to withdraw it as a feature, as, you know, maybe the auto steering. They're probably going to have to withdraw it, because there are going to be more deaths and there are going to be more accidents. And that's going to be especially true as more Teslas equipped with autopilot, with that autopilot feature from Tesla, with the automatic steering and so on and so forth. As there are more of those vehicles on the road, you're going to have, even if it's a small percentage of people that become too complacent with it, that is going to grow to the point where it's going to become intolerable. You know, what do you think the accident rate is for airplanes? You know, airlines. You know, it's a pretty low accident rate. Yet, you know, you can say, well, it's just, you know, you know whatever the percent, whatever the thing is, it's, you know, you have an extremely low chance at any given point of getting on an airliner and dying as a result. But on the other hand, it happens. Now, let's say that the airlines got their accident rate down their fatality rate. Let's just say a fatality rate. Let's say they got it down to 90, or you know, they got it down to where they were 95% of the people that got on airplanes lived, but there were 5% of them that died. Do you realize that 5% of them that died would be globally would be a huge number? And so the same thing is going to have to be true. You're going to have to, this autopilot or any kind of automatic steering is really, I mean, if it's going to have to be so perfect that very few actual people die. So I believe that they're going to have to withdraw it. It's just, you know, you think you can put it out in the public and, you know, there's going to be people that end up abusing it. There's going to be people, you know, and I'm sure that this guy that died would have not, he'd have been one of the people that said, no, I'm not abusing it. But he began to trust it too much, obviously, and he was distracted. So, I think it's a bad thing. Now, there's another accident that happened where the autopilot feature was engaged on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Now, if you've ever, anyone that's ever driven the Pennsylvania Turnpike, it's a fairly narrow road, you know, because it's one of the original limited access highways, and so you got, you know, two lanes going each way, and you know, except for the parts where they've kind of rebuilt it and they've added lanes. But the vast majority of it is it's kind of a narrow roadway, and there's not a whole lot of margin for error, you know, as far as you know, getting out of your lane, and so. Someone, you know, that was riding along in their Model X and had the autopilot feature engaged, and somehow it messed up and it ended up wrecking. I think it ended up rolling and it ended up, I think initially it was westbound and it ended up in the eastbound lanes upside down. Now, nobody died. The driver never died in this, you know, in this wreck. But obviously, he wasn't paying too good of attention. Yeah, something went wrong. Sensing systems, which, you know, so you got a camera that's part of it. That makes up part of the sensing system, and then you got radar sensors. You know, that I think there's some radar that's involved, and maybe some, and there might even be some sonar sensors. I'm not exactly sure, but it didn't work. Something went haywire. So this isn't ready for prime time, and there's even, you know, even though, you know, it seems like a cool feature, and I know that the people that have it are just, they really want it or whatever, it's not ready to be put out into a mass audience. I'm sorry. And I think it's going to be many years, if this ever happens, if this autonomous driving thing ever does happen, it's years and years away. And that's just my opinion. We'll see what happens. So, I could go on and on and on about that topic. Anyway, thank you, Joel. So, let me see. I'm going to pick out one of these comments from Scott. Don't know what Scott's going to be talking about, but anyway, here is Scott.
Tom, I'm listening to you and Joel talking back and forth, and hello, Joel. I don't know if you're listening to me or if you want to. If you do, my podcast has become private, and but you can still listen, and I talk about much of the same stuff that Tom does, and I like to discuss it, too. So you can get in touch with me, scott@podteacher.com. Or, in any case, I was listening to you talking about America needing a moral shock to its system, and how Trump is that shock, and how that's what is needed to get kind of a moral renaissance going. Well, I think he's a part of it, but yes, I agree that in order for Americans to turn from the immoral road that they are way down, and I agree it's way down this road, and I'm very concerned that four more years of the same old under Hillary Clinton and more runaway liberalism, it's just going to be a very bad thing. You know, what's the next step after, you know, they invade our bathrooms and they drive around smoking pot and it's legal? And God knows all the things that can happen and be justified. Well, in any case, the shock to your system. Well, this is what happened to Germany. Hitler was a shock to their system. As you know and probably stated, in Germany, it was not the majority of people that were in favor of what Hitler did. It was definitely a minority. And a lot of the people out there that are against bringing in Muslims are pointing out that although they're the largest amount of the Muslims might be just fine people, that it doesn't take a lot to make a lot of bad stuff happen as a percentage. And it was a small percentage. It was the minor percentage of the German people who at all favored what Hitler was doing. And once things got rolling too far, then they realized, oh my God, what did we do? What have we created? And you know, it just kind of ran away and got out of control. And it was truly unprecedented in that country. But they learned what a fragile thread our systems rely upon, and that they can unravel pretty quickly under the right conditions. And they decided, after this all went down and they got saved from it eventually by Russia and America and got split up and everything else and finally in recent years put back together, but partially we decided for them by neutering their military and what they can do with it and other such things to keep them from doing that again. But they themselves decided that this was never going to happen again. And it was a moral shock to their system. And this is what caused them to make rules for elections where there's no such thing as super PACs, where the money comes from people donating it. Much better way to do things, don't you think? This is what led them to decide that people should count more than politicians and the rich and all of that, and that they should set up systems that served the people. And so they have, and it's sort of rolled out all around Europe, they have social systems that take care of you. And these people are not bankrupt. They're the powerhouse of Europe. Because another part of it is the fact that they truly believe in what they're doing. And that's something you just can't make Americans do. You know, you could pass all the laws you wanted, you'll never be able to make them want those laws. and abide by those laws. But when you pass laws that you really believe in, and then you raise your kids believing those laws are right and just, and this is the way it should be, and we're better than a lot of the rest of the world, you're going to end up with a country that's just going to naturally do better. And so they are the powerhouse of the European Union. Because the people believe in doing the right thing. They believe in taking care of people if they're sick. So their medical systems are, you know, funded by the government. But everybody's in it. I could go on that one forever. They believe in taking care of people who are disabled, unemployed, education. If you want, you know, you need education to get into a job, and you need education when the needs of jobs change, and you know what you know is not useful in the world anymore. You need to get new skills, but here it'll cost you an arm and a leg, and you'll get out of school, and you won't be able to afford to pay it back. It doesn't happen there. Why not? You know, because they've put together a system that favors the people, and even the rich that run things so well here don't really have a problem with what's going on there. So they got a shock to their system, and it turned them in the direction that they are now going. You might not agree with every decision they made and how their society works, but I think they did pretty well. I'm very worried about what they're doing with the Muslim immigrants coming in, and if they aren't going to lose their identity when the Muslim immigrants ultimately out-reproduce them and then vote in their own set of rules, whatever that means, or will it happen? But I'm worried about that. Other than that, I think they set up a pretty good system after the horrible things happened, because they did not want ever again to be seen by the world as the world's pariah, and they did not want ever again to have to deal with something that horrific. And yes, that's a moral shock to the system and what it can do for you. And I think we've had some minor moral shocks in this country, but we've never had anything major. But yeah, that's what we need. In order to have a moral renaissance, you have to have a moral shock. And usually that moral shock is not a good moral shock like Trump. It's usually something really bad that happens that you're deeply ashamed of and you want to make sure will never happen again. I hope that never happens, but I fear it may. Catch you later.
Thank you, Scott. So, usually what happens with people, if you just look at, you know, people individually, usually what happens, if people are going to change, typically, many of them, not everybody, but a percentage of them will end up in the gutter, either literally or figuratively. And there's no place else to go. Now, some people will just die in the gutter and you know, try, more the merrier. Misery loves company. But there are other people that, you know, they find themselves in the gutter, and they've tried everything else. There's no place else to go, and they suddenly start having rational thoughts, and they start looking for real answers. And that happens a percentage of the time. So, you know, will that happen? It's happened to a lot of people already, I think. It's happened to some people. And I think that as part of the shock that is happening, I wouldn't say it's necessarily Trump, although Trump has kind of shocked some people just by, you know, speaking the truth and telling people what he thinks. But part of the shock is the Democrats, not necessarily just the Democrats, but the elite themselves, and it includes the Republicans. There are a lot of people, for example, right now that are shocked. They really shouldn't be, but they're shocked that the FBI came out and that James Comey came out and said, oh, well, here's all the things that Hillary did, but it just doesn't warrant investigating. Now, is this the same James Comey that that prosecuted Martha Stewart. Remember when they prosecuted Martha Stewart back in, you know, it was like the early 2000s? You know, and they just went after her with, you know, she ended up, serving some time in prison. And it kind of took her little empire down quite a bit, to quite a few notches. That's the same James Comey that did that. Now, boy, he's changed a lot, you know, because it comes to Hillary. Oh, here's all the things that she did, but oh, no. Isn't worth prosecuting. Something's wrong. Something's rotten. And so it's taken, you know, these people that are getting away with things and they're demonstrating that the system is rigged. That's a shock. There's a lot of people that have kind of been in denial that, well, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt, I just can go along and kind of keep my eyes covered. I don't want to, don't want to have to deal with any problems. It's just easier to ignore it, not face reality. You know, the thing with the bathroom has shocked a lot of people. You know, trying to put the transvestites in bathrooms has shocked a lot of people. Maybe, you know, to a certain extent, the gay marriage thing before that. But certainly the transvestite thing's been more, that's been more shocking. And then now it's just obvious that the system is rigged, and that's really happened because of Donald Trump. Because then, Trump knows how to, react the right way. The system, both the Democrats and the Republicans, the people that run the parties, have tried and tried and tried to take Trump out. And he's foiled them every time. And they've ended up, it backfired on them, and that's been a shock. That's shocking. But it's also shocking to people because all of a sudden it becomes obvious that who is the real enemy? Who are the people that are manipulating us? It's the people that we have trusted, kind of to run things, sort of the elites that people look up to. They're, they've been exposed, because of the way Trump has handled it, they've sort of exposed themselves. And that's a shock. So it is necessary for, enemies, bad people, criminals, serve a function. They serve, they can be, they're not nice people and you don't want to be, too chummy with them, but they do serve a purpose. Evil serves a purpose. Evil acting through people does in fact serve a purpose. It's not obvious, unless you're able to kind of look at it in the right way. it's not really obvious, but it does serve a purpose. And so we're in the process. There's a number of shocks, and it's to the system, and it's not necessarily what we might believe it to be, or it's not necessarily what we think, where it's going to come from. So, I've got another comment from Scott that I haven't listened to it yet, but it's a couple of minutes long, and that's why I picked it, because it was about 2 minutes long. And so I'm going to play that right now. So once again, here is Scott.
Hey, Tom, you said that an animal will never torture another animal that it kills to eat. Au contraire, cats do it all the time. They play with their prey. they bite them up, they paw them around, they play with them for a while before they actually kill them. They don't just boom go in for the kill and then eat the mouse. Sorry to tell you, but boy, oh boy, that's incorrect. And I know, I'm a cat person, and I know what how cats are. And I've got to tell you, that's probably similar in a lot of other animals too, particularly of the feline variety. Maybe felines are the evil animal, I don't know, but you tell me. But, you know, all the cats are very, 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 it's very common for them to just play with the animal. Killing them and eating them, it can be secondary, especially house cats that are already full. But they're very attracted towards going after and killing their prey. Birds, mice, moles, you name it. Often they don't eat them. And even more often, they don't eat all of them. I find my cats eat the front part and leave the butts behind. Typical cats. But I got to tell you, they're not the most kind in the way they kill their animals necessarily. Yeah, ripping them from limb to limb. I mean, I'm being graphic, but you have to make the point that, no, they are not kind in how they kill them. Now, mind you, they're not doing this because their mind is in some way depraved and screwed up and all that. It, like you say, it's all built in, deep down in. It's their hunting instincts, and it just kicks in, and they don't even get to think about it. They don't have that level of awareness. Only we do that. But yes, we can do things very depraved. However, if you could give these cats a brain boost, or any animals a brain boost, so they could think like us, they'd be like us. It wouldn't be that much different.
All right. Well, thank you again, Scott. So, yeah, I've heard, you know, now that you mention it, you know, I know that cats can kind of play with things. You know, I've heard of that. I don't know that I've ever really witnessed it, per se. But I'm not a cat person. I don't particularly care for cats. I didn't ever really have any bias against them one way or the other until a few years ago. My aunt, it's kind of a long story, but my dad's youngest sister ended up dumping a bunch of cats on my property because she had all these stupid cats and she just kind of brought them over and dumped them. And you know, it's kind of a long story. She and her husband at the time were parked in their motorhome on my property, and she had all these stupid cats. And when they were there for, I don't know, a couple of weeks or whatever, and if that long, and then they left the cats. And my mother kept feeding them. You know, and so then they were. They were there for a period of time, and they were a nightmare. They've all got the same personality as far as I'm concerned. Now, I know that there are people that would beg to differ, but I fail to really see the difference in personalities. So, long story short, over a period of months, I grew to sort of despise cats to a certain extent. I don't want them around. If you're going to have a pet, dogs typically, can have a, or at least are more appealing to me, although some of those don't have the greatest personalities either. You know, I don't particularly care for the little yappy type dogs. If I want to have a dog around, I want one that's fairly quiet and that's not a nuisance. And there's a lot of those little yap dogs that, and you see it. You see these stupid people. They have the dog, the sort of the irritating dog, and that's why they have it, so it'll irritate them. And then they've got something to be irritated with. And I see people do that. See, that's why they got the dog, is because they wanted to be irritated by it and then something to holler at. And shut up! You know, as stupid things, yap, 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 yap. So, but, so I can see that, you know, the cats are playing with, you know, whatever, but, cats, dogs, you know, whatever animals, they don't have a malicious intent. You know, it's not, you know, evil. I can say this. Good, whatever good is and whatever evil is, are the only two, you know, the only creature on this earth that those things can sort of manifest in are human beings. Your cat or your dog or whatever cannot, or your goldfish cannot be good, and it cannot be bad. Your goldfish cannot be moral, and it cannot be immoral. It just is what it is. Same way with your cat, same way with your dog. And it's not simply a matter of we've got bigger brains. Now, you know, it's entirely possible, you know, people can be kind of blind, you know, sort of, in many cases, sort of willfully blind to this other side. They, you know, they don't want human beings to be moral. They don't want that kind of responsibility put on them. They want to just believe, well, we're just intelligent animals, and then everything's a shade of gray, and we can just do, we can, you know, eat ourselves to death and sex ourselves to death and, you know, have, you know, kill as many babies as possible, you know, the preborn, whatever. Kill them because they're just unwanted byproducts of sex. Doesn't matter. We're just animals. And so that's what they want to believe. They don't want to believe that human beings are uniquely have this moral dilemma and this moral imperative. You know, so, but if, you know, if someone wants to believe that they're an animal, I don't care. Go, you have at it. Are you happy? Are you happy believing you're an animal? Are you happy sexing yourself to death? You know, you're dressing up in your transvestite clothing and invading women's rooms. Does it make you happy? Are you happy? Probably not. Or whatever it is you do. So there's human beings are the only creature that, you know, God expresses himself through his creation. You know, and anything he creates, he created, you know, everything that you see around you, us included, God created, he expresses himself through the creation. However, human beings have a choice when it comes to how we exist. We have a choice, and this choice really manifests itself as moral. You know, it's a sort of a moral choice. And it's a choice that animals cannot make because they don't have the capacity to make it. And it's not simply a matter of we've got bigger brains. So, But, you know, it comes down to either you see it or you don't. Either you really want to see it or you don't. And if you don't, you know, fine and dandy. Live your unhappy life. Live your miserable life. If you don't want to see it, you know, find other people that'll agree with you that black is white and green is pink. And it's everything's just a shade of gray. And that there is no God, and that it's all just some kind of random accident that we're here. You all can agree to get together and see how see if it makes you happy in the end. See how well it works out. Chances are, it's going to end badly. So, anyway, I need to be bringing this to a close. So, in the meantime, kind of in the middle of Joel's comment, the truck got unloaded. That happened pretty quickly. I was at Bolingbrook, Illinois, and so I ended up going after that. I ended up going to Manteno, Illinois, and picking up the next load. And so I picked that up, and then, you know, so it's kind of well after midnight, Central Time. So I came, now I don't even know the name of the town here. There's like a south of there on Interstate 57. There's like a Pilot truck stop and then some other truck stop on the other side of the interstate. And so I came to the, whatever the other truck stop is. It's got a Subway restaurant. Don't know the name of the town, but I guess I could look it up. Let me see. So I've got my phone here. Yeah. So let's just ask Google. Okay. Is it going to work? Where am I?
Here's a map of Gilman.
Gilman. So I'm at Gilman, Illinois. And so that's where I'm taking my break. And I've got, I don't know, let's say 470-something, 480 miles. Roughly to drive from here to Kansas City, Kansas, where the load delivers on the 8th at 2 a.m. So basically tomorrow night. So anyway, hope everyone is having a great week, great month so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.